Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Goddess Alive Radio. We always seem to coincide with the 8 o'clock train. Has anybody else noticed in the background? Welcome to Goddess Alive Radio. My name is Kimberly Moore. I am the priestess and founder of Mother House of the Goddess. So delighted to be with you here in 2016. It's our second show of the year. And I'm really excited about our guest this evening is Tehea of Hathor's Sistra. We're going to be talking about sacred dance, and she's the founder of Hathor's Sistra, and we're going to get some Sistra action going, and we're going to talk about the goddess Hathor, so lots of good things coming up in just a moment when we bring Tehea on. Just a little bit of housekeeping for everybody. I wanted to make sure everybody remembers this Saturday night is our live new moon ritual with Laura Amazzoni. We'll be featuring the goddess Saraswati, the goddess of creativity and wisdom. And Laura does the live video ritual. So anyone who's interested, if you're not already registered, you can register for free at goddessmoonrituals.com or just go pop on over to motherhouseofthegoddess.com and you can get the links all there. Otherwise, you definitely want to make sure you check out what is going on at mysteryschoolofthegoddess.net. We have so many gorgeous offerings, and one of the newest is Resurrecting the Magdalene with Laurie Ann Lumbee, which is an intensive course that includes an ordination and activation to the Magdalene. Absolutely. I'm telling you, I have sneak peeks of this class, and it is intensive and wonderful. For those of you that are drawn to activating the Magdalene within, I cannot recommend it more highly. If you want to see what Laurie Ann Lumbee is like, there is also a free Magdalene course to kind of get a sneak peek. And then, of course, we have the more intensive class available as well. Lots of other good stuff that has begun with the new year. Creating the Soul with Brandi Ostet is all ready to go. So for those of you who are looking for a wonderful New Year's practice, this would be it. Jump in there. There's lots of mixed media, arts and crafts, and tapping into, well, your soul and spirit and goddess. And, oh, just delicious, delicious goodness. So that's kind of our mystery school housekeeping. I hope everybody is doing wonderful. I hope 2006 treating you well so far. Of course, we have a little bit of astrological interesting chaos going on. We call it interesting chaos because Mercury's in retrograde. He is always interesting and always chaotic. So I hope it's not treating you too badly. So, taking a deep breath. Boy, it's been a day. I've done a lot of talking this week. It's been really interesting. Even though Mercury has been in retrograde, I probably have been on the phone for, I don't know, maybe 15 to 18 hours already this week. So it's been a big communication week and in a lot of good ways. So there's good proof that Mercury doesn't always kick you in the butt. All right. So taking a deep breath, let us step into the House of Jubilation and under the auspices of the Mistress of Jubilation and Joy, the goddess Hathor. And we have a wonderfully marvelous guest this evening. She is a sacred dancer and teacher, and I'm going to say, and her name is Tehea, okay? So we're going to let her pronounce it absolutely correctly. It's T-A-H-Y-A. And you can find out more at T-A-H-Y-A.com. And also, HathorsSistrum.com. And the Sistrum is spelled S-Y-S. T-R-U-M. She is a sacred dancer and teacher. She's the founder of Hathor's Sistra, and I'm telling you, click on that link, everybody, while we are talking, because you want to check out the absolutely gorgeous Sistra that Tehea has brought into creation. I mean, they are simply gorgeous. If you click on the promo on Mother House of the Goddess, I also included a video of her doing some sacred rattling, and oh my gosh, it's absolutely beautiful. And to see her presenting for just a few minutes and channeling Hathor, it is beautiful. So without further ado, let's bring Taheha on and begin. Let's see if we can get a little sistrum rattle out here. Taheha, are you there, darling?
Oh! I most certainly am. Happy New Year, and thank you so much for the invitation to spend this time with you.
Well, Happy New Year to you, and thank you. Yay! Oh, that sound just gives me goosebumps. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Well, before we go any further, let me share this with you. A sacred chant from the temple dedicated to Hathor in Dendera. We sound our drum for her spirit. We dance her grace. We see her lovely form in the heavens. She is our Lady of Sistrum, Hathor, Lady of Delight, Mistress of Dance and Queen of Song, Lady of All Beauty, Mistress of Salutation. When both her eyes are open, sun and moon, Hathor, Lady of Delight, Mistress of Dance and Queen of Song, Lady of All Beauty, Mistress of Salutation, Lady of Sistrum. Our hearts rejoice, receiving light. We dance for her.
Oh, so be it. So be it. That's so beautiful.
Isn't it, though?
It is. It just tingles. So tell us how the Lady of Sistrum came to you.
Well, thank you so much, Kimberly, for asking. It's one of those mystical, magical tours that is challenging to relay because it's practically unbelievable. And yet, of course, I can't help but believe it because it happened to me. I have been studying and practicing Middle and Far Eastern dance traditions and rhythms for many, many, many years, over 40 years. So I bring a lot of experience and study and devotion to my practice and my craft and my art and my life to this moment. And in 2007, I was invited to go to Egypt, and the invitation was extended with the caveat that this particular itinerary included going out into the White Desert and drumming with Bedouins. And having studied a lot of frame drum rhythms dedicated from, you know, throughout the Middle East, and particularly a lot of Egyptian rhythm patterns, that was the turning point for me. The idea of visiting the pyramid, for whatever reason, never really appealed to me. Or let's say it didn't really speak to me. It didn't speak volumes to me. There were other things and other places I thought I might want to go rather than make the extensive journey to Egypt to do what a typical tourist might do, visiting the pyramids, etc. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But this particular itinerary included drumming with the Bedouins, and that just spoke volumes, and I didn't hesitate. And within 2 weeks, I was gone, and I was in Egypt.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. It really was awesome and so magical because it just happened like in the blink of an eye. The other thing is that this, interestingly enough, this particular itinerary also included going to Petra, and I had no interest in going to Petra either. So the friend that invited me to go and enticed me with the idea of drumming with the Bedouins said that she had made many trips to Egypt and that she was not going to go to Petra. She was going to stay in Luxor and be doing side trips to the goddess temple of Isis and the goddess temple of Hathor. And I thought, now that's what I'm talking about. That's what I want to do. That was incredible because we weren't even on a tour. We, you know, I had like my own private guide.
Right.
So bear with me if you will, because this is a little bit of a long story, but I'll try my best to keep it short. So I go to Egypt and have this wonderful experience of visiting these temples. And honestly, I was doing it with my enthusiastic self in the midst of all of the challenges that one encounters when they are in a third world country. And I know you recently had some other beautiful women on. I enjoyed the interview that you had with them talking about their upcoming trips to Egypt, which, you know, God willing, one day I get to join them. But at any rate, so I'm merrily going along my way as an enthusiast of the temple history and just the whole idea of setting foot in these temples where processionals had taken place and women had played the frame drum and the sistrum and so on and so forth. And quick little sidebar here, for those of you that are familiar with the work of Lane Redmond, who wrote the book When the Drummers Were Women, I had the extreme good fortune of studying with her on more than one occasion. We were definitely well acquainted with one another. She was aware of my work with pursuing the idea of the sistrum in terms of, you know, just seeing it carved on the temple walls as she had described in her book. Okay, so
the book
is in my book an absolute must read because the history of the rituals and the role that women had in ceremonial rituals related to celebrating the divine feminine, as you well know, has been covered by The Sands of Time. And thankfully, Lane did this beautiful job of taking a lot of information that was not only archived for us, so to speak, in art, you know, whether it be a clay figurine or, you know, something etched into, you know, a votive candle holder or mirror or whatever. But there are so many instances of the divine feminine being worshipped and celebrated, and those rituals were accompanied by drumming and dance. So I had heard about that way back 100 years ago, you know, when I started studying the dance. And now, thanks to the work of Lane Redmond, a lot of that information is now available to us as a reference in this beautiful book that she did, Bless Her Heart and God Rest Her Soul. Okay, so I went to the Temple of Isis, and Kimberly, have you been there yet?
I have not. Not physically, let's say that.
Right. Well, may the blessings be that you have the opportunity to go, because just going into Aswan is a wonderful experience. And then you have to take a little boat in the water because the temple is on an island, which is a whole other story, which we won't go into. But at any rate, it's really a mystical, magical experience just to be on the boat and be coming up upon the temple, you know, in your little boat, your little motorboat, with the man and his galabiyah, and then coming to the gate and the entranceway. I mean, you can just imagine. I mean, that's so magical in and of itself. And then you set foot on the ground, you know. So this is just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And again, Aswan was great. And then we visited the temple dedicated to Horus. And then we made our way to the temple of Hathor in Dendera. And by the way, this is hours and hours of travel between one temple and another. It's quite an interesting dedication to the experience because it is like literally a labor of love. So we get to the temple of Hathor in Dendera, and all I know is that I'm at the temple of Hathor in Dendera. And isn't this wonderful? I read about this in Lane's book and had read some things that in a catalog from the Metropolitan Museum about Hatshepsut. At any rate, I'm at the temple and I make my way through the entrance gate, and you have to walk down this pathway and then make kind of a left-hand turn. And I really think that you'll appreciate this, Kimberly, because I really was there simply as a little American tourist. Yes, I had all of my life experience behind me and underneath me and in my heart mind. But in that moment, I was really there just kind of walking along as an American woman in Egypt, being respectful of the culture and being in awe of being at this sacred temple space. And as I turned the corner and saw the temple, I instantly fell to my knees and found myself sobbing.
Oh.
It took my breath away.
Oh, my goodness.
And honestly, I was somewhat embarrassed. I thought, oh, I hope my friends don't see me because I don't know what's going on right now.
Right.
Yeah. So that was a surprise. I didn't see that coming. Meanwhile, I tried very quickly to overcome that because the caravan that we were in allotted us only 40 minutes at this temple site.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, it was terrible. Anyway, I was bound and determined to find the place where Lane had described the birthing chapel and the hallway therein, where there was a depiction of something like 42 priestesses playing frame drum along one side of the hallway and 39 or 29 priestesses playing sistrum along the other side of the hallway. I was like, I have to see this. I have to find this. This is important to me. So, and you know, when you get to these temple sites, it's not like Disneyland. It's not like here's a little graph showing here's where you are now, and if you want to find this, go here. No.
No. Oh,
so,
my.
So I'm in this major temple site with various the main temple and the chapel dedicated to Isis and the sacred lake and the birthing, but it didn't say this is the birthing chapel. It didn't exactly say that. And honestly, right now, I don't remember what it said. So I am scurrying around. And, you know, as fate would have it, as the goddess guided me, it was pretty much at the last minute that I finally made my way all around the thing, running all over the place, all over the site, and I finally found the wall. And if anybody's interested, I do have the picture of the goddesses playing the sistrum in procession from that temple site, and then I had to run away. But I got the picture, and I had this experience.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And P.S., the photograph that I use on the, I believe I have it on my website, but I also have it on the hang tag of the instrument, is a photograph that I took at Dendera, and it turned out to be an exquisite picture on a camera that was, you know, fairly basic, and it, you know, again, I was sort of not, I don't know if I was truly accessing my highest self, but, you know, I was like, oh, that's pretty, and I took the picture, and when I got home, it took my breath away that I got this amazing, beautiful image of the goddess that inspired the etching on the instrument that I brought forth in the 21st century. Who knew? I mean, in the moment, I had no idea. So, okay, fast forward. I come back to the United States, and I think to myself, I have singing bowls, I have Doombeck, I have multiple frame drums, I have Egyptian rick, I play finger cymbals, I have all of these percussion instruments in my living room, and here I've had this trip to Egypt, and I've visited the Temple of Isis, and I've visited the Temple of Hathor, and I've seen literally carve for like all millennia images of priestesses playing these instruments, processing for sacred festivals. I've got to get me one of those.
Yeah. Right.
Right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And when I went in search of, I couldn't find one, remotely impressed me with what I felt I had witnessed the women playing. So I shrugged my shoulders, and I just thought, well, isn't that terrible? Isn't that just a darn shame? And that was that. Until about maybe 2 weeks later, maybe let's say 4 o'clock in the morning, I literally awoke with a start. And I just really feel that I heard the goddess tell me, you will bring this forth. So, that's a long-winded story, but that's the story of how it happened.
That is beautiful. That's absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, all of the best things happen just that way, you know.
Right.
You know, it's like you're divinely led every
exactly.
step of the way. You know,
yeah.
calling you home to your familiar place there at
mm-hmm.
Dendera.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, amazing. Amazing. So in the creation of this system, which, by the way, is just simply gorgeous, and then, you know, to look at the website, it's really beautiful. Like, you look at it and you go, wow. But when I saw the video of you using it, I mean, it comes alive. It's like a shining, you know, little glimpse of this energy moving. I'm like, wow, that is really gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
So what did it take to kind of birth this? Because obviously you're tapping into some sense memories, past lives and everything as well.
Well, I will say that what it took to bring it forth was perseverance. I held a vision for it, and I talked to a lot of people about my idea, and a lot of the people that I talked to, starting with my beloved friend and dearly departed drum master Paolo Mattioli, who was the djembe drum designer for Remo, and Glenn Velez, my master teacher on the frame drum, who is a signature series frame drum designer for Cooperman frame drums. Both of them resoundingly gave me a green light and encouraged me to move forward with my vision. And so that was awesome, you know, to get their blessing. And I just started, I proceeded to speak with people at Remo Manufacturing and at Cooperman Frame Drums, and I'm really delighted and happy to say that Patrick Cooperman and his sister Patricia both took an interest, and together we set foot on this journey. And I worked with people who helped me, like industrial designers who helped kind of create a 3D vision of my very rough 1D drawing of what I thought it should look like. And, you know, I showed them images of the system that I had found in the Metropolitan Museum, for example. And I just kind of took all of the information that was in my heart mind and was blessed to work with people who could help bring it to fruition. It's just been a magical journey. So ultimately, the Cooperman frame drum people were wonderful in helping me get the original prototype to a place where it needed to be. And then their jingle manufacturer went out of business, and they had more than enough work to do with building the frame drums that they handcraft. So they sent me on my way, and I went in search of another manufacturer, and happily, Mideast Manufacturing picked up the ball where Cooperman left it off, and they helped bring forth this magnificent instrument crafted from rosewood. It has a beautiful silky feel in your hand, and we used the image that was that is on the sistrum played by a priestess by the name of Hanut Ali, and she lived in approximately 1100 BC, and I just loved the image of the goddess that was on her particular instrument, and so we imitated that, and it's laser engraved, and then I kept the snake rods as the placeholders for the jingles, because the snake is a very important element in the Egyptian culture, as I'm sure you well know. So there you have it. That's how it got designed.
Oh, my goodness. And I have to say, I mean, you know, as you're saying all of that, and I'm looking at this gorgeous instrument, and again, for our listeners, you want to go to Hathor Sistrum, and it's Hathor is HathorSystrum.com, and take a look. Your pricing is excellent. I mean,
Thank you.
Really amazing. As you're saying this, you know, I look at the price and I go, wow.
I mean, oh, that's so sweet of you, Kimberly. Thank you. Well, you know, I hope your enthusiasm will help her reach the tipping point where more and more and more of us are clearing the space with this mystical, magical implement, instrument to ignite and create and cultivate sacred space and repel and dispel chaos.
Ah, beautiful. Beautiful. So can you give us a little bit of history of the sistrum and how they were used, you know, historically in the temples?
Well, I'd be delighted. And before I do so, however, I want to just explain that my pronunciation of Hathor has to do with the fact that some of my teachers of ancient Egyptian teachings pronounce H-A-T-H-O-R, Hathor, because in the hieroglyph that is the depiction of her name, you'll see the falcon, which is Horus, and Hathor was known as the house of Horus. So
yes.
Hath is house, and Hor is for Horus. So I have developed the habit of saying Hathor.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And
it's such invocation when you say it. It's beautiful.
Thank you. And I chose to spell the word sistrum with a Y simply because my name is spelled with a Y, and I just thought that would be a nice way to tie in the fact that I designed it. And there are instances where a sistrum is interchanged with an I and a Y, so I thought I would do that. Regarding the history of the instrument, I've done my best to put as much information as I have available to me at this time at my website, which, thank you very much, is HathorSystrum.com. And it's a very deep well, as you can imagine. So it's almost breathtaking for me to talk about it because it goes back very deep into ancient Egyptian culture. It goes back to ancient rituals where they would shake papyrus, and they would do so in a way, as I believe, as I understand, again, to create that rustling sound that the leaves of the papyrus would make, so that clearing the space, and allowing the presence of the divine to descend. And as time went on, you'll see depictions of the Naos system, which is the one that has the temple-looking top. And the women are holding the papyrus and the Naos top system, as opposed to the loop top system, which is the one that I have designed in honor of bringing back this percussion instrument and making it part of our daily lives. And by the way, another sidebar, part of my inspiration for this was not only that the goddess commanded me to do so, but also because of my involvement with the frame drum and my enthusiasm for it and playing finger cymbals, I have encountered many women who really want to be a part of reenacting that ritual, ceremonial, procession idea and playing a percussion instrument as part of an ensemble in sacred ceremony, right? So they come and they ask me to learn to play the drum, and the first thing they find out is that there's a learning curve with holding the drum, much less learning how to play it and then learning rhythm, okay? So their spirit may be willing, but the practicality of their lives and the amount of time they have to dedicate to it sometimes doesn't match their enthusiasm, and they get discouraged. And so what I encouraged the manufacturer when encouraging them and begging them to bring this back, you know, into practice, was that playing the sistrum is like putting a rattle in a baby's hand. It's natural. It's easy.
Yeah.
There's no learning curve. Sure, there's a learning curve if you want to learn a rhythm, but, you know, you put it in your hand, you're shaking, you're playing it. And you can,
right.
You can do what it was designed to do, which is to dispel, you know, negative energy and to allow the creation of sacred space to allow the presence of the divine to come in. So,
I will tell you, I mean, what's so fascinating about this, I adore sistrums because I'm not a drummer. Okay, so I'm not good at keeping the rhythm. you put a drum in my hand and I feel kind of lost, you know, but you put a sistrum in my hand and I'm like, oh yeah, I can do this.
And, you know, thankfully, because I could relay that experience of women wanting to be a part of the ceremony and be a part of the percussion ensemble, if you will, but challenged to play the frame drum. And believe me, I am not trying to discourage anyone who has an interest in playing the frame drum. We are a huge community of women across the planet playing the drum, and we love it, and we welcome all of our sisters that want to play. And honestly, those women that want to play the frame drum with me and are challenged to play it in an ensemble, I just make sure that they are empowered to at least step in rhythm with us, which we walk in rhythm. If your heart is beating, you have rhythm. So
right.
We start with walking in rhythm, and if you can play one stroke when you step with your right foot, and you play another stroke 8 counts later, stepping on your right foot, you know, that's great. That's fine. I welcome you, you know. And the sistrum is another layer, and it's another texture that you can add in. And as you said, it's like, boom, you put it in your hand, I got it, I can do this. So
it definitely was
helpful in encouraging the production of it, shall we say. So I feel incredibly blessed, and I'm so grateful for everything that has happened in my life that brought me to this point.
Well, it's an amazing story, you know, and to watch, you know, you on on the video. You have such a magical presence. I mean, you know, certainly a priestess presence. You are evoking and invoking as you speak. It's very obvious. So it's just absolutely beautiful to watch that. You do a lot of events. You know, I look at your website, and I mean, you're a busy, hands-on, in-person lady. Is that most of what you do is in-person stuff?
It is. It is. As you can see, I put together a few YouTube videos to get the ball rolling with an introduction on this is how you hold it, this is how you can start. So for anyone listening, if you're interested and intrigued after visiting the website and seeing this beautiful instrument, I mean, my God, it's gorgeous. It's 16 inches tall. I mean, it'll just look beautiful on your altar, on your mantle, you know. I'm convinced it blesses the space just by its mere presence. And then you can shake it whenever you like. So if you are intrigued by the appearance of it and you decide that you want to bring one into your home or your workplace or your artist studio or all of the above, I did present full of YouTube videos so that you had an introduction to the instrument and here's how I hold it and here's where you can start with playing it and stepping if you like. So, yes, I have a couple of mini instructional videos, but I really love teaching and I love being with other people and I love being in community with others. So I do tend to primarily do more in person than I do in terms of an online internet presence. And I have an event coming up on January 24th at the Goddess Temple of Orange County in Irvine, California, which I'm so excited about. Ava Park couldn't be a more beautiful person I've ever met, and I'm really excited about seeing her again and visiting the women at the temple.
Oh, they have such great things going on. I was so excited to hear that you were going to be there. So
we will
certainly disperse that for you through our community, you know, to let everybody know. There you go. I love it. I love it. So how do you use the sistrum in your, let me rephrase this. What is the difference in your sistrum use between a group practice and your personal practice? Is there a difference?
Well, that's an interesting question. Well, I guess there is in that in my personal practice with it, I do tend to... Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, it's really, I do use it in a ceremonial way, both as a group and in my personal practice. When I'm with a group, however, we use it as an invocation and an opportunity to create sacred space. And then we kind of evolve into making it a texture in a rhythmic composition. So we do kind of step away from the spiritual and kind of get into the secular for a while. But then what happens is we kind of get back into or it evolves into it being a spiritual journey because once we find our groove and we're playing together, oh my God, it's the most wonderful, uplifting, heartfelt experience that I can't get enough of. And when I'm doing it at home with myself, it tends to be more prayerful and invoking blessings and creating sacred space and trying to calm myself down and bless the day in front of me. So I tend not to get into the secular, I guess, when doing something with it in my own personal practice. And they're both enriching. So I just want to encourage others to participate because you know, don't you just feel that as the momentum of daily life continues to accelerate, that this pulling back and going to these quiet spaces and doing our best to dispel the chaos becomes more and more important?
That is so true. Absolutely. You know, and especially with bringing in the energy of, you know, the goddesses from the cradle of civilization and from the Middle East, I think there's so much turmoil there that it seems to be grounding their energy, you know, and grounding their light more and more by these practices.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and speaking of the turmoil in the Middle East, that brings me to another topic, which is off topic yet important, and that is that I have a blog. It's called Egypt Beckoned. It's I don't even know, it's called blog post or something like that. But the title of it is Egypt Beckoned, and both of my websites can take you to that blog. They are linked. But at any rate, I am most grievous that the extreme terrorists who are doing such dastardly deeds are being referred to by the beloved mother goddess Isis. And so I typically don't talk about anything political ever, but couldn't keep quiet on this one. And I saw a terrible bumper sticker the other day that was expletive C-K-I-S-I-S, and oh my word, I just grieve that this beautiful, beloved, winged mother goddess who nurtures us and wraps her wings around us in beautiful protection of love and light is being, that name is being used in association with people doing dastardly deeds. So all the more, I shake my sistrum and I grasp the sistrum and I drive away those who are hostile and dispel what is evil by means of the sistrum in my hand.
Good. It's so, I agree with you 100%, Haya. I mean, it is, although I will tell you, I'll share with you, in a meditation in the past couple of months with Isis, it was almost like I had this transformative energy come over it. And how I approach it now is almost like every time her name is said, it's like invoking her. And so it's almost humorous that they revel in invoking one of the most powerful deities on the planet.
Right. I have to agree with you 100%. I have had that same thought on more than one occasion, and that it's all part of, you know, a greater, higher plan, you know?
Yes, yeah, yeah. But you know, what's really interesting is that makes me very sad at the same time is that when I have done a post, say, on Facebook or on Mother House, or when I actually, this is really interesting, in working with Daughters of Isis, with Gwen, I mean, who's had that name for her business for 25 years, you know, I mean, you know, like one of a payment for PayPal was held up, you know, because Isis was in her name, in her business name.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear about people who are, you know, being tagged. And I started tagging things as the real Isis on hashtags. And even so, I mean, there's been some kickback a little bit on Twitter and stuff. I'm like kind of going, look, people, don't be so crazy. Get this right, you know.
Right. You need to know. You know, this is one of those you need to know.
Right, right. But I love that idea of shaking the system to disrupt that energy, to bring in the jubilation and the joy of the goddesses, you know, there, and to really ground them into our presence. It's beautiful,
right.
And so
right.
sacred, so sacred.
Yeah, and I think because the environment is challenging, to think that we are bringing in a moment of jubilation may be ambitious, but certainly that jubilation can be a swelling of love and light that pushes back the dark. And, you know, ultimately that's the best that I feel I can hope for, is that I'm going to do my part, you know, and I'll never forget this little song that I learned when I was really young, and it's just so appropriate, that this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
Yeah, I love that. Yes, I love that. That is
all
so
around
good.
The world. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for me, shaking the system and clearing the space and invoking the divine really gives me an opportunity to feel that love and that light and the feminine divine is rising within me, and I am being gifted an opportunity to let my light shine and to just try and be broadcasting as broad a beam as I can, you know, like a lighthouse in the fog.
Yes, and that is what, you know, it kind of evokes. That's what I also love about, you know, I was really playing today on your website because I really like the sound. when you go to your website, I'm like, oh, I really like the sound. You know, it's such, it seems like such a simple thing. You know, if we begin using these sacred instruments and these ancient techniques, it's such a simple thing, and yet it can be immensely powerful. And I'm so delighted to hear you recommend Lane's book. And I mean, certainly she was such a light for so many of us, and still continues to be that. And her work with the frame drums was simply, just, you know, unbelievable. So it really is important to bring women back to the sacred dance, to the sacred music, the sacred sound, that the priestesses were, you know, kind of the channels for in the temples.
Right. And as I understand it, when there was a festival, when there was a special event that took place at the temple, the processionals came through the courtyard, and we see depictions of dancers and musicians and clappers, not only hand clappers, but also there were ivory clacker clappers that were played. And of course, we know that the harp was played. And there were depictions of musicians playing big cymbals, you know, just one in each hand and, you know, clanking it, I imagine. And then there were the sistra players and the frame drums and all of them, you know, making beautiful music, whatever that may have been, processing through the courtyard. And what the research of my guru has revealed to me is that the only instrument of all of that that took place through the courtyard, the only instrument that made it into the innermost sanctuary was the sistrum. So those rituals in the innermost sanctuary of the temple that took place with chants, and we know about the musician chantresses from a book, for example, by Emily Teeter that was published by the University of Chicago. It's a book about Mores Amun, Ressa Amun was a high priestess, temple musician that lived around 800 BC. And the only thing that made it into the inner sanctuary was the sistrum accompanying the chants that were recited. That also shows how important an implement and instrument it was in sacred ritual in the ancient culture. And I just feel so incredibly blessed that I've been gifted the opportunity to explore and study the history of this instrument that has such a rich tradition in women's culture that we're just learning more and more about. So one of the things I'm going to do, for example, at the Goddess Temple in Orange County in a couple of weeks is to do a PowerPoint presentation showing images of these different women that are depicted in hieroglyphs and depicted in cave or funerary sites and also carved on the temple walls. And I'm very excited to do this presentation, and I can't wait to do more. So if anybody wants to hear about it, call me.
Yes. That's fantastic. Well, that's a great, you know, a great way that we can all share about the beautiful sistrum is to share Tahiah's information and invite her if you have a group in your area. You know, I mean, do you travel as well and go to different events across the country if people bring you in?
Oh, yes. I live in Pennsylvania. I'm traveling clear across the country to do this presentation at the Goddess Temple. And thankfully, it's in connection with my also traveling to the NAMM convention, which is happening in Anaheim, which is the National Association of Music Merchants. So it's a wonderful place for me to be with like-minded people who love music and everything music-related, and it's a great place for me to talk to people about my beautiful instrument inspired by the goddess. It's just very exciting. And so that was my visit to the temple is in conjunction with that. But I'm more than happy to travel wherever I'm invited to go because it's my honor and my pleasure. And I just feel so thrilled by the idea of shedding light on the tradition of women being a part of ancient temple ceremony and what an incredible privileged role we played. We were in this role, we were considered wife of Amun. In fact, Meres Amun means Amun loves her. So the god Amun is, you know, the temple priestesses were in charge of the ritual and the ceremony at the temple and were considered the wife of Amun. Now, I don't know if you know this, but they didn't do this full time. This was just part of their life. These women were also mothers and wives and cooked and took care of their homes, but then a certain part of the year, they would go and dedicate time to their service at the temple.
Beautiful. That's amazing. I did not realize that it was like, you know, temple. I knew it was temple service. I didn't realize it was part-time. That's amazing. Oh, that's
yeah, they
beautiful.
Made really rich lives. I highly recommend this book about Meres Amun because Emily Teeter goes into a lot of detail delineating the life of a woman who was a musician, temple priestess, and chantress. And by the way, when I say that, sometimes people misinterpret me saying enchantress. And I'm sure they were enchanting. But I'm actually saying musician, A-N-D, and chantress.
Chantress.
The women chanted the chant.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So please be sure you understand what I'm saying. As I said, I'm sure they were most enchanting, I'd like to believe, but. But they were in charge of reciting the chants.
Yes, exactly. How beautiful is that? That's really just amazing. So what is on for 2016, 2017? Do you have more Sistrum creation coming, or, you know, any big projects or anything?
I would say my biggest project is my vision of putting together a pictorial essay on the history of the Sistrum that's going to be evolving from the PowerPoint presentation I do, so that ultimately there'll be this lovely companion pamphlet of some kind that will be available on the website to accompany the instrument. I think that would be a really good idea, and I'm very excited about that. But, you know, it's a long road. I mean, it took 7 years to bring the instrument to fruition, so I don't know that I'll accomplish it in 2016, but I'm working on it. And, of course, I'm at the ready to do as many live presentations as I'm invited to do.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I was down your way last spring. I was in Sarasota. I did a presentation, and I'm sorry that we missed one another, but I hope to come back. My friends Jeff and Barbara at the Rhythm Inlet have pretty much kept an open door policy there, so as soon as I can find a window, I'll scoot back down there, because that was a great experience. And you have awesome drum circles on the beach down there.
Yeah, well, Sarasota is actually a little bit far for us. I mean, it's about 4 hours.
I thought you were right down in that neck of the woods.
Yeah, so, well, Sarasota is opposite side. I'm actually about 30 minutes north of Miami. So.
Yes, you are. Yeah, you are not close to that. Well, they have amazing drum circles over there.
Drum circles. Yeah, they do have good drum circles down here. But, you know, as I said again, too, I like attending them to listen. I'm not a big drummer.
But see, that's another reason why I thought the Sistrum was a great instrument to return into our hands, because there are so many people participating in drum circles that I'm well aware of, again, from my association with my beloved friend Paolo, who was a great drum circle facilitator. And I recognize, because when I was in drum circles with djembe players playing my frame drum, I was completely invisible. My drum had you know, was drowned out by the djembe. And of course, good drum circle facilitators will make sure that the frame drum players have their moment in the sun, if not several moments. But I recognized that if I had a Sistrum, be in the circle and be heard.
Oh, interesting. That's very,
and not
very
that I wanted to, not that I wanted to overpower anything. I just wanted to be a part of the conversation. I wanted to add, you know, a texture to the sound. And it does that.
Oh, my goodness. That's beautiful. I love
that.
Take
your Sistrum. Take your Sistrum to the circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, good. And Tahai, I would love to have you back anytime as things are, you know, coming up for you and whatever we can do. Of course, motherhouseofthegoddess.com, there's a link directly. If you go down, there's an ad directly for Hathor Sistrum down there. So we're happy to send people your way to, you know, connect with this gorgeous instrument and your beautiful energy, because honestly, that it's so magical, really.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your saying so. I just opened myself up to let the goddess do her work through me.
Beautiful. I don't think you could say it any better than that. And obviously she's been quite busy.
She's been what?
Oh, sorry?
Obviously she has been
Oh, quite busy working through you.
Oh, yes, 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 indeed. Yes,
yes.
Indeed.
Beautiful.
You know, one day
well,
I hope that, you know, we can craft an instrument that will be more child-friendly. I don't know that the snake rods are appropriate for use for, you know, children under 10 or 12.
Right.
So I wonder,
right.
I see a child's version coming out sometime. I'd also love to see it on display in museum shops, because I know when I go to see exhibits dedicated to ancient Egypt and I go into the museum shop, I believe that there's a big hole that needs to be filled by this instrument. So
oh,
we'll see.
What a wonderful idea. Yeah, I love that. I love that idea. And, you know, well, we'll have to, you and I will have to talk too about pushing it out a little bit further through Mother House as well. We can maybe, you know, brainstorm a little bit on that. And
Oh, and I also wanted to mention that my friend Rosemary up in Toronto has told me that there's a biannual, so it happens every 2 years, there's a big conference called Goddess Spirit Rising. And I'm really hoping to be a part of that in 2017. That's
beautiful.
The other thing that I have on my sights.
Oh, fantastic.
I hope to see you there.
Yeah. That, I know, you know, they did it in 2015 in LA area, right. So, and my friend Constance Tippett was there, who does images of the goddess and the goddess timeline, and she said it was really marvelous, beautiful. A lot of women from the Goddess Temple of Orange County were there as well. So, gorgeous. And there's so many amazing, you know, gatherings and groups. So for those of you that want to get involved, I mean, you know, just reach out to Haya and talk to her. You know?
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You know,
so, yeah,
you've got a great presence on
Facebook.com and Tahaya.com and MotherHouseOfTheGoddess.com.
We're getting it up. Well, thank you again so much for being on Goddess Live Radio.
My pleasure. My honor, my distinct pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me to be here. I feel that this is an auspicious beginning to the new year, and I thank you very, very much.
Oh, and I thank you. I love that. Oh, my gosh. We'll have to get a really good clear recording, and then we can play it sometimes when we need to. It's like, you know, be one of my little buttons. I can go, now we're going to play Tahaya Sistrum.
Oh, what a great idea. What a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds good, Kimberly. Well, let's keep in touch online, offline, you know, in the web, outside of the box.
Right. Sounds so good. And to all
so
of our
all
listeners.
All blessings be upon you always.
And to you as well. Darling, you're bringing the light of Goddess down, and it's great. Thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you.
And to all of our listeners, I thank you so much. Again, just a reminder, Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, goddessmoonrituals.com to tap into the live ritual for the goddess Saraswati. And next Thursday, we'll be back with Katie Snow from Spellery Magazine. So we've got some really great stuff coming up. And Key's going to be with us on the Mesoamerican Goddesses. We've got the Goddess Full Moon group coming. I mean, you know, we're busy. We're busy little goddess women. So everyone, have a wonderful weekend. And may 2016 bring you all blessings of Goddess. Thank you and good night. Tahaya, thank you again, darling.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.